Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, and the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. And hey, Caroline, Willie, and D-Maze is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. We'll hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel at the podium very shortly. Ryan Tannehill is at the podium now, so we'll keep you updated with anything juicy that Ryan Tannehill may say, any tea that comes from Tannehill at the podium. But before we get to Vrabel, let's get into some of your thoughts. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Will from Nashville, Texas, says, speaking of toughness and a competitive edge, who would win a hoops one-on-one between Willie and D-Maze?
Oh, man. Willie would beat me in an inside. No. Yeah, I mean, Willie got some...
Let's get real.
Here. Willie probably throw a wicked elbow too, right in the gut. He'd probably back me down and hit me in the gut.
He's a
dirty player, but I expect that. He old school. You know, he hit me in the hip with the elbow after a few times, man. I don't know. I had to keep Willie outside, drive past him. He would almost Willie the type that'd force me to shoot the jump shot every time. I give it to you. Take it, Mason. Take it. I got to make a few in order for him to come up and guard me. But if I miss, he's just going to sit, you know, in the paint and get the rebound every time. But I think Willie would more than likely win.
Look, I admire you, D-Maze, because you're in a very small category. Most of the time, the football players think they just beat any old basketball player.
No.
We had to show the Nashville Cats way back in the day. Uh-huh. We had a little charity basketball match with some older former basketball players against the Cats. And the Cats were, you know, they had a couple guys. Like Corey Fleming was a good basketball player. But we killed him.
Just got to keep him humbled.
So I feel good about my chance. A basketball player should beat a football player.
Yeah, you'd think. Should. Yeah. Mike Vrabel is up at the podium, so we'll send it over to St. Thomas Sports Park now.
So I haven't made a final determination, but that's a possibility.
Fighting for their lives on Friday, either to make this team or to make another team. What's your best message or
advice
to them?
Well, hopefully that hasn't changed since they got here. I mean, hopefully they're fighting every day on earning the right to be here. I think if you waited till now to start fighting, fight's probably over. So I don't think there's anybody like that. So I don't think that's going to be an issue.
You have an idea already of who you think that you want to go with as the punt returner, or do you feel like that competition is still?
I think that's probably still there based on where we end up on Tuesday with the final 53. And again, it's going to be fluid, and that's why we've been repping a lot of guys and working a lot of guys back there.
You've been around Mike for a long time. He seems like he's having a really good camp. Anything he's done this offseason to put himself in a position to make so many plays out here on the practice field, or just that's just his?
Well, I think that Amani has always shown the knack to make some plays, right? And I think the one thing that's gotten him is availability. No fault of his, and just some things that kind of have happened from an injury standpoint that has kept him out. But I think he's always been productive. That's a big part of the reason why we like him out there. He just is kind of how it had. Couple things show up here last year that limited some of his snaps, and so when he's out there, he's been productive.
You feel like DeAndre's operating at his peak level right now, like super ready?
Yeah, I think he's building towards it. I mean, I think that if yesterday is any indication, I thought that he practiced with speed and great urgency and followed up today and building a relationship with Ryan. So we just got to, continue to get him, the things that he needs. He played in this league a lot of years. He's seen a lot of coverages, and, it's been fun to watch him just work with Ryan, work with young players, and been a fun addition to have.
What are the things he needs?
Well, conditioning. I mean, I think at this level it's just conditioning, right? That you want to be out there as much as possible as a receiver and making sure that we're smart. Try to get him out there. You know, what are we going to do? Work on some toe drag with him on a individual today. So just try to get him out there for, you know, warmed up a 7-on-7. And then, you know, if we could take a little bit off his legs early on in practice, you know, I'm sure there'll be, you know, different plans, you know, throughout the season, and that'll be one of them.
It's supposed to be 101 on Friday. Special plans do you make?
Well, if yesterday was any indication, our guys wanted to practice yesterday, and I hope they want to play Friday night, because it was hot yesterday, and I didn't hear a guy complain. I thought guys were just wanted to go play football yesterday, and that was probably the most impressive thing. And I would imagine it'll be like that, but we'll have to be on hydration. We'll have to be IVs and everything that we do with Todd and Lauren and Frank, and monitor that and make sure that we're rotating, and that we, you know, you want to make sure that you're giving guys opportunities on special teams, and with special teams comes speed and distance and maybe sometimes fatigue with heat, but also that's part of seeing how guys handle some of that.
Exactly how it was originally planned with the Patriots.
But rarely does, Jill.
But looking at the last couple of days, did you get out of this week what you wanted to, despite not having that joint practice?
Yeah,
there?
I mean, I thought we practiced, got everything done that we needed to do, and tried to get out of the heat a little bit today and just, you know, shorten things up and let guys go play on Friday, get them ready.
Will Love is back at practice today, Coach. Do you have a plan for Friday?
No, not yet. We don't have any availability or, you know, any decisions yet. See how he comes out of practice and see how he feels.
Mike, Jeff, and Ryan both talked about the growth in the offensive line over the course of the past month or so. What's your perception on how that group's come together, both the starters and the backup guys?
I think everybody's working. Everybody's been, you know, stringing some days together, and I think the conditioning is good. You know, when you look at the way we finished the game in Minnesota, you know, pushing piles, being more physical, and being able to run the football and control it with the, you know, in the second half, you know, we'll always continue to make sure that, you know, there's edge rushers in this league that you're going to have to be able to block. And so we have to make sure that, you know, that's where people are investing resources and money. And so we'll have to make sure that we're doing everything we can to block those guys.
You mentioned a couple of times that Tier's opportunity is enhanced with increased conditioning. What kind of curve have you seen for him on the conditioning front?
Saw an impact player on in Minnesota, and saw a player that wanted to work yesterday and work on conditioning and work on affecting the quarterback when they threw it, and he did that. And so I think that he's working hard. I think the best thing for these linemen is that they get it during practice. You know, it's different than just kind of running some sprints. Like, these guys are in there wrestling with other linemen, and then have to run to the football and get back and do it all again. And it's a run one time, and then being able to run off the football and pass rush. So the best conditioning, I believe, is done at practice.
That depth at the safety position, you know, behind Mold and Byard and Hooker, how do you like that? How that's developed?
I mean, Mike Brown continues to progress. Shai Carter showed up in the game. Tyreek made some plays yesterday, and Matt Jackson has shown to be somewhat of an impact player on special teams. Has drawn a penalty, should have drawn two penalties really on the kickoff team, and one on a punt. Made a nice play today, and so now I'll get opportunities on Friday night.
When you're going through composing that 53, man, like, how much does the special teams go into those, you know, that fourth safety or that fifth or sixth receiver?
I mean, you have to. It has to. You know, you have somebody, you're going to need people on the punt team, and, you know, you need guys to protect and cover, and you need guys to cover kicks. And so it's a large part of building a roster at every position outside of, you know, the offensive line and the interior defensive line.
With the percentage of, like, kickoffs, for example, right? I think it's like 38%, 31 as opposed to 38% are being brought out of the end zone. Does that distort, like, the way you –
No, I mean, we'll see how this thing shakes out with the fair catches. You know, we'll see how that shakes out. But, you know, we had three kickoffs inside the 20-yard line in the second half last week. So if we can get the ball, you know, a good hang time on the 2-yard line, and we feel good about covering the kicks, then we'd like to do that. So, but if not, then, you know, bang them into the end zone and put them at the 25. Well, just more comfort, you know what I mean? Just comfort, you know. It's got come to a new team, and again, it's everybody goes through a different transition. Everybody's got a different personality, and, you know, I think just a lot more comfort level with, you know, it's been good to see him and Peter build a relationship, you know, in the meeting rooms and out on the field. Well, I mean, he rushed the passer, you know, coming in. That was something that he could do, and it's done well. And, you know, see if that, you know, carries through on Friday night. But he works hard, and, you know, I think Crow and Lowe have done a good job. I think Arden and, you know, Danico and Harold are three different examples of different ways to rush passer. I'm sure that he's taken a little bit from each of those, you know, five people.
We appreciated your non-participation report to Nick. Was Byer just a day off along with those other guys?
Yeah, everything's fine with Kevin. He had reached out and communicated that, you know, he had something to take care of, and appreciated him doing that. Sorry, Nick, I didn't give you Byer, did I? Forgot.
You should have seen Nick. He was.
He should be. He got the Golden Bear on. Jack Nicklaus golf shirt right there.
There you go. That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel at the podium. A much more jovial Vrabel today than what we heard yesterday, which, you know, that's saying something considering he wasn't necessarily all peaches and cream. Better mood today from Mike Vrabel.
Far cry from yesterday, I tell you that.
Yesterday,
he woke up on the wrong side of the bed yesterday.
Baby Belichick yesterday from Mike Vrabel. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow, will join us coming up next. Break down what he saw on Saturday in Minnesota, what he heard from Mike Vrabel there. Coming up next, Jonathan Hutton, Caroline Willie, and D. Mace. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie, D. Mace. Stay tuned in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 6:05 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers, AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 3-1-2 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Joining us now is Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, always appreciate having you on every week. Your biggest takeaways from the Titans preseason game on Saturday night in Minnesota?
Great to be back with you guys. Always enjoy this. First and foremost, I think Tajay Spears comes to mind for me. The Titans have a real weapon with him. And just whenever I think, well, you know, I'm not very athletic, but I've seen it all. Here's a guy that apparently doesn't have an ACL and has arthritis in his knee, hurling dudes, and is the best guy on the field in the preseason. So hats off to Spears. I think he's more than just a piece to the puzzle. They can really use him, especially in where they're lacking the speed in the passing game, and that element that's hopefully can be consistent with what they can add with Tim Kelly's offensive play calling. Beyond that, I thought Malik Willis continues to show areas of improvement and areas where you still see things that, like, yeah, he's a backup quarterback. And should we be thinking that? I mean, I think he's vastly ahead of where I expected he would be. And that's partly due to where Will Levis is right now, compared to where Malik Willis is, and also due to his attention to detail in the offseason where he's throwing the football a bit more. But he's still got to, you know, his best asset are the legs and the running. And unlike last year, now we're hearing Vrabel say, hey, do more of that. And the key is blending that together and using his best skill set while also posing a threat and being able to use the pass game as the dual option for him. Those are the two big takeaways for me, Caroline. And as far as the kicking game goes, plenty of questions there moving forward for a team that, once again, has questions in that area. We touched on this last week, and I'm not really sure why they allow themselves to be in this spot.
Yo, the kicking is just brutal. And I want to get into that, but I want to go back to your point about Malik Willis. Jonathan Hutton is with us. Do you think Malik helped or hurt his case to win this backup quarterback battle on Saturday night?
Well, he helped it. Like right now, same place we were last week, right? Right now, I think Willis is the backup quarterback on September the 10th. Is that good or bad? That can be argued. But, I mean, with Levis not playing and with Willis, for the most part, going the duration of that game, minus Mason Kinsey taking some snaps. Yeah, I have have no doubt right now that he would be the active quarterback on game in week one against New Orleans. But I think it also shows, regardless of who's the backup quarterback, it is undeniable the importance of just keeping a clean pocket for Ryan Tannehill. Not even just from the injury standpoint, banged up where you take away his mobility in the pocket a bit, like we saw last year until he was ultimately knocked out with the ankle for the rest of the remaining games. Caroline, the quarterback situation behind him, and it's not good across the league when you get to your backup, but if you need a drive, if you're down one in the fourth quarter with a minute and a half to go and you need to go get a field goal, right now I don't trust the backup quarterback or the kicker to go down and get their job done. But you can't just do that by running as a quarterback. You have to be able to let it fly. And the backup currently, I don't trust in that situation, unlike other situations where you can at least keep it balanced if you want to as a play caller.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Excuse me. Now, Hut, looking at one area I am starting to be a little bit concerned about, which I really wasn't at the beginning, is the tight end position. You know, I was disappointed in Chig that he two catchable balls. He dropped both of them. That's uncharacteristic of him. I look for him to do better moving forward. But behind him, the depth behind him isn't there as far as pass catchers. What do you see at that position?
I'm with you. Okonkwo is the key piece of what you're discussing there. They have factored in, and I think it's a fair expectation for him to take that big jump. You know, it's not unlike whenever Jonnu Smith in 2020, Mace, had what, like 400, 450 yards receiving, something like that. But he found the end zone. To what you just mentioned, he's not dropping passes. Mm-hmm. Okonkwo doesn't have to be the game breaker. I think he has that certain athletic ability in key spots, but he's got to be the guy that moves the sticks and that you can rely on. He can't be, in certain situations, the guy that forces the three and out by just catching or not making the easy catch to put them in a position, even if it's second down and long and it ends up being third and short, make that catch. So, it starts there, and they kept three tight ends on the active roster to begin the season last year. I think this year it's more likely four, because what they did is they counted Carter as one of the tight ends on their depth chart, even though he's a fullback. He made the roster as a fullback. They're going to move guys in the backfield there and then put them out and motion them out to the tight end. And you know what? If I'm thinking about what the tight ends and the importance of who you're carrying and who you're not, right now it still remains the run first offense. It still remains an offense that you're not certain on in regards to the offensive line. They need to bulk up on the edge a bit, and that's where more of the blocking inline tight ends come to mind more than Chig. Mm-hmm. Both have to play their part, and Okonkwo's got to be the number one.
Now, the one thing that did hit me, Hut, this week, well, last week, right before the game and during the game versus the Vikings, is, and it didn't hit me prior to this, I'm truly worried about this team, because I'm watching everybody else play, and it seems like they got a good grasp on what's going on. The depth behind them looks pretty good. Not great, but good enough. But then I mm-hmm. watched the Titans. And I see, other than the defensive line, I see no depth on this team whatsoever. And that scares me.
And that goes back to, at some point, you have to hit on some of these picks, right? Mm-hmm. And you eventually have to pay the price for it. They've swung and missed on some high picks on the offensive line recently. For back-to-back years, argue one way or the other, but for back-to-back years, they've drafted a backup quarterback and a backup running back on day two of this draft. And that has left them with low-end picks at wide receiver at best. And even prior to that, some of their higher picks at wide receiver, even on day two or early day three, have not panned out. So that's where the young core that we touched on a bit recently, as far as young talent, first contract guys, who are you really excited about as either right now they can step in and be impact players or guys that you feel like are very close to then being described as that? To me, there's maybe four on offense with Burks, Okonkwo, Skoronski, and now Spears. And the rest of this team, it's very top-heavy in terms of veterans. It's guys that are finally getting to a second contract like Jeffrey Simmons, which is well-deserved. But it's also – it's just a weird roster in terms of it appears as though exactly what how we described it this offseason. One foot in, one foot out. Are they in or are they rebuilding? How do we describe this roster? They're an injury or two away from being a very easy description. And we know how injuries have factored into this roster over the last 2 years. It's not good in terms of depth. And in key areas, I don't even think it's great in starting roles, which is why, you know, right now the injuries at wide receiver, one of the starters in week one's probably on another roster right now. I mean, if you just start looking around at punt returner and what they're doing, inside linebacker, certainly depth at corner / defensive back. I'm looking at those areas and thinking, oh, and by the way, kicker, we could see four positions with different names on the back of the jerseys that are currently playing for another team. Meanwhile, I think on the offensive line, the guys that get cut on the 29th next Tuesday are virtually described in the same way. So I don't know if you really get an upgrade when the massive cuts happen, other than just rotating guys in and see who can be consistent and who hasn't been.
More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. 106.3, The Game. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow, is with us now.
All right, Hutt, let's break down Michael Badgley. I was looking at some of his numbers. I had not, as they make the choice to go with an experienced kicker, every Titans fan, I'm sure, flash back to their experience with Michael Badgley, the one performance where I was actually in the stands watching as a fan where he missed an extra point, he missed a field goal, and then he was done. He got booed out of the stadium, and he was gone. But by the end of that year, he had gone to Indianapolis, and he kicked pretty well. For whatever reason, they didn't keep him. And he kicked for two more teams last year. So he seems to be the, if you need a kicker, call 1-800-BADGLEY and you can get him. Like he's kicked for five teams. So they think he is an upgrade over unproven guys that I guess had struggled. So what do you think we're getting here?
Well, just based on what Vrabel's saying, I mean, he's, you know, this is back-to-back weeks where the kickoffs have not been great. And, you know, he's viewing it as an upgrade on who they have, Willie, not maybe what they want to have. So get someone in the mix now and then see what's on the waiver wire come August 29th at the deadline for the cutdown day. Look, this is an issue for this team, as we well know. They know it, too, because it's part – not being in position offensively last year, and also part because they didn't trust their kickers to actually attempt many on the field. The NFL average for attempted field goals last season was 33 attempts, and the Titans had 24. That was the fewest in the National Football League, 24 attempts. The average is 33. You know, you've got the games where Kansas City, Titans are up 17-9. And they end up punting from the 42-yard line in that game. There was 12 minutes and change left in the game at the time of a 1st-and-10 snap, and they end up punting from the 42. It was 1st-and-10 at the 39. They were not able to rely on their kicker in that. They missed the field goal by Randy Bullock to beat the Giants against Cincinnati. Shudak missed from 35 yards. And it was 10-10 right before halftime. Cincinnati ends up winning 20-16. That changes the complexion of a game. Look, the Titans only attempted, not made, but attempted 10 field goals from 40 or more yards out. That is the second fewest behind Philadelphia, who was exceptional at moving the sticks and scoring points. Meanwhile, we know this is an offense that in large part, it's crushed by a missed three. You know, you three matters here based on how this team is built. They want to be great on defense, and they can be. They need to be good on offense, and they can be. But there are a lot of intangibles with that. And good on offense means getting three on the board. If you can't put it in the end zone, at least extend the lead, at least attempt to, instead of relying on, you know, your Pro Bowl-esque punter and his accuracy to not boom it through the uprights on a punt, but actually pin an offense deep in their own possession. And I won't even get into the 50 yards or more. Look, the NFL, I will, the NFL attempted as a league 224 field goal attempts from beyond 50. The Titans accounted for two of those. That is way, the NFL average is seven per team over a given season. That is a huge miss, swing and a miss on what they have tried to do at kicker over the last couple of years. And it's not easy, but it's got to be better than this. If you're bringing two guys in and before you even reach the third preseason game, you've seen enough and you're bringing in a journeyman to hopefully catch fire, which, and more likely you're bringing in someone else by September the 10th to kick in week one. It's not a good situation, and they didn't have many makes, let alone attempts last season.
It's an interesting case you make because I'll play the other side of the argument just a little bit here with yeah. Bullock, because there is an argument basically that's saying Bullock, just because of his tenure in the league, is a little more expensive, and mm-hmm. it's more of a money-saving attempt when you're trying to find a guy that's maybe just as good or better for a cheaper price. That's a little bit what they did with Stonehouse last year over the veteran sure. that they had in Brett Kern. And we can argue what would it have looked like with Kern, you know, knowing how good he is at some of those little things you were saying, Hutt, but let's mm-hmm. save that because that's a different discussion. But Bullock, he didn't miss an extra point last year, which is not a given anymore, right? Most kickers are going to miss one here and there. And he was 17 for 20 in the field goals. Now, he missed the one in the Giants game that we all remember, but he hit some big ones. I had not thought about the how many times that they pass up a chance for a 50-some-odd-yard field goal.
Or 40-plus, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but he was 17 for 20. He was six for eight from beyond 40, Willie. It's bad.
So he
missed two games, and I can't remember why he missed the two games. But I guess I'm asking, was Bullock that bad? And the other question they have to try to figure out is Badgley just as good as Bullock potentially? Because a lot of it is, does a guy just get on a roll, get comfortable, and he does the job? Like sometimes Badgley got off to a horrible start. Got booed, and they were just like, we can't have this happen again. We got to try somebody else. And it ended up being a musical chairs for a while.
I think you can roll the dice with that perception if you have an offense that reaches the end zone. I realize that Bullock was okay in extra points and good, right? I won't crush him for that, but he also didn't have to attempt very many extra points whenever he's kicking. So, you know, I'm just comparing it to the average attempts for three compared to what that means for this current offense. There's no guarantee that they're moving the football better yet across the 50 and into scoring
right.
range.
Your point is you got to have great special teams for this team. This
yes.
team needs to have a plus in special teams.
No,
but
no
17
doubt.
For 20, 85% is about a little bit better than league average. Right.
But Vrabel's only really calling on that with true confidence if it's inside 40 yards. You know, again, they made seven from outside 40 plus. The NFL average was 13 makes from 40 plus. They're not attempting those, even if they get past midfield and up to the 30-yard line. So I struggle with Stonehouse. At least it was a true battle, and you can make the clear argument as to why he's special. You know, they found someone that they can develop and become the next Hendrick or Kern. They can't make that argument at kicker over the last 2 years. It's a turnstile at that position when you, at least if there's a kicking battle, you're bringing in Badgley to compete against Shudak and not the other way around. And it's evident that they feel that way because they've already, you know, deuces to the two that were there in one cut down day prior to the final audition. And, you know, they're going into a week. Right now, they don't know who their kicker is for September the 10th. That's a big issue for an offense that struggled to put up 16 points a game a year ago.
Now, with that being said, do you think it's Vrabel sort of quietly saying, hey, listen, this offense isn't good enough to not have a kicker on board, someone that we can rely on to make 50 plus yarders or 40 plus yarders? Because my thing is, when this offense was hitting on all cylinders, the kicker was never, we never brought up the kicker. Because why? Because Derrick Henry was doing his thing. A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, they were doing their things. Ryan Tannehill had probably the best season of his career. So we were not worried about the kicker. But the last 2 years, because the offense hasn't been that, the kicker becomes more of a premium.
Yep. And to your point, and this also, you know, Willie, I'll flip it too. Like the 2020 year you're talking about, the third down defense was god awful, like the worst we've seen. So they were more aggressive offensively because they relied on the best area of their roster. In case of last year, the defense was what they relied on, even when injuries played a factor, because they were getting the most out of that group really all the way through the KC game, for instance. In this case, yeah, I mean, other offenses can miss a field goal because they have the magician. Right. The Titans don't have the magician that's going to bail them out right now. You can't point to that one dude like you can the other top AFC teams. And that's really the difference between this offense and the top offenses in the league. The Titans offense can be good, but the great offenses have the guy. And right now, that's the difference between, okay, if the Chiefs or the Bills or the Bengals, if they miss three, it's not crushing. It's not changing a certain vibe and flow to the game. The Titans, and what Vrabel's pointing out, even on kickoffs, they have to be so dialed in on the fine details of what they must do to not give up a true advantage to the teams that have the quote-unquote magician. And they keep games close. And in close games, the Titans have to have the guy that can put it through the uprights whenever you know you're giving the football back after the attempt to the Mahomes, the Allens, the Burrows, the Trevor Lawrence. Those guys are getting the football back, and they're going against the strength of your defense. You would prefer to have points on the board after a possession if you can do it, if you're in scoring range, like the average NFL offense would truly believe in that moment.
D. Mace referenced a very good Titans offense that included the name Corey Davis.
Yeah,
I'm curious what you think. I don't know where they are cap-wise, but if Corey Davis, as speculated, is cut by the Jets, would you be on the phone in a hurry to try to see if he would come back here?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I would have three phones available for all these wide receivers right now.
A couple of burners, a real one.
Yeah.
Just keep them all
going. It'd be like Schefter getting calls and making calls. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Because, again, Corey Davis is exactly what this offense needs in terms of having a true number two. Hopkins can be a one if Burks isn't there, but there's no number two that elevates, right? And I'm saying that based on what I know Hopkins has been and what they signed him to be. Hopkins can also be the two if Burks is the one, but there's a significant drop off of the rest of the guys that play a key role around the top two. And the question is, can they find a guy that can step in and be a two if needed? Robert Woods could not do that a year ago. And we've seen other examples of that with Julio Jones, for instance. I'm not saying that guy's available, but that guy is going to be more than just one piece on a certain down and distance or a certain package. And he's also probably going to be in the mix as a returner, given the injuries that they've already sustained and guys that we've seen in the preseason getting a snap at that.
Here's my thing with Corey Davis. Is you would bring him in as a depth piece, as a plug-and-play kind of guy. But if you're bringing him in as more of an insurance piece for other receivers that might be injured, you have to count on Corey Davis being healthy. Can we count on Corey Davis to be healthy and available?
Can we count on Treylon Burks to be that?
Or no.
DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, or this roster?
No. That is one thing we have learned is no, you cannot count on this roster.
Yeah. All of that plays a factor. And look, I raise my hand and say, like, this team has taken swings on guys that have injury histories and they haven't panned out. Well, Bud Dupree comes to mind. You know, like they've drafted, of course, Caleb Farley, who has it. Jeffrey Simmons had the ACL and he's panned out. Right. Like they got that right. I'm thinking though, from what Willie's saying of just, man, at this point, we went out and got Hopkins. Burks is already missing time. Now, you know, Kyle Phillips is on the mend with the MCL. Where are we for what we were trying to be whenever we signed DeAndre Hopkins? Who can come in, who knows the organization, who knows kind of the, what we're doing, what we're about, and that knows Ryan Tannehill? I think that's also key in getting up to speed fast, because that's not what this offense has been in September over the last 2 years. They've been sluggish and slow against their season opening opponent. And this offense needs to come out and be more than just a two-quarter group that's putting points on the board. At the very least, they need to rack up some time of possession in the second half. And at least in the case of the 2020 year, when we last saw Corey Davis and what he's paid on now, and he won't be paid on that in the future, maybe you can make a case for bringing him back to him and his representation, considering the role he'll play and how quickly he can plug and play based on expectations here versus anywhere else.
Hutton, you are the very best. Appreciate your insight and always for being flexible with our schedule. Chat next week.
No doubt. I'll always do that for you guys, especially when you're covering the pressers and what is a busy time of year. Always enjoy this and have a great rest of the week.
Some things, Hutton. Busy time of the year, but the best time of the year. We'll get into your thoughts coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. Hey, your favorite game, Silly Underdog Picks, is back. Make your picks today at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. As week zero of college football kicks off this weekend, we are back, baby. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports.
Get back to a new kicker getting used to snapper holder on his first day into the misses, or he need to be better out of the game?
We any kicker that we bring in or that we have on a team just needs to make them.
Him on the tape that made you want to bring him in?
We'd had Michael here before, and you know, he's got the next crack at it. I'm sure they'll, you know, we'll look at other ones too.
Not the most glowing endorsement for Michael Badgley from Mike Vrabel there at the podium yesterday. Man. So Caleb Shudak and Trey Wolf both waived from the Titans yesterday. They bring in Michael Badgley, and Michael Badgley went 6 for 9 with his kicks yesterday, and it was a brutal day for him. Clearly, what you hear that there from Mike Vrabel, according to TD, a better day from Michael Badgley today. He was good from 33, 39, 43, 35, 40, 48, 33, 51, TD says, with room to spare. So that's encouraging to me. 33 and 33, missed from 53 and was good from 42. So a much better day for Michael Badgley inside today. But as we were talking about with Hutton in this past segment, I mean, this kicking position is a point of concern for me, and I think for a lot of people with this Titans team. And bringing in a guy that you've brought in and cut before doesn't necessarily breed a whole lot of confidence, at least as far as I'm concerned. But Randy texts into our text line, driven by WillsAtCanada.com. Maybe it's Randy Bullock.
Could be.
About the kicking position. Says, do the Titans have a kicking coach? Someone that helps with technique, helping the coach kick the kickers up? We have linebacker coaches, running back coaches, etc. Are they just letting the kickers practice and hope that they get better? They shouldn't have to be releasing two kickers if they had somebody that could at least coach one of them up over a six-week period, not including OTAs.
I think we're overthinking this when you were going with that. Mike Vrabel said it. Hal Gill's fun, when I hit him with a bunch of analytic stats, he comes back with, my stat is, I have to think of the letters here, G-I-D, get it done-tivity.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Like
do
I
it.
Say, Roman Yossi, he's fast here, and he's got these exit passes, and he's got these great outlet passes, and like all, I'm reading off all these crazy, they call them the fancy stats. Mm-hmm. He goes, he gets it done,
yeah.
Right? I look at it, he gets it done. Kicker is the ultimate. Do you get it done or do you not get it done? Mm-hmm. The average kicker. This is not like I tweeted out. It's a random day on NFL Network. They were showing some old Super Bowls. I got all nostalgic. I remember watching some of the first Super Bowls I watched as a kid. Uh-huh. One of the first things you notice is how bad the kickers are back then. In the 70s, they were brutal. Like, half of them were still kicking with their toe. Oof. Like, imagine what that would look like. Then they went through the weird period where some people were kicking barefoot. I don't understand why that ever was a good idea.
Ow.
But they did. You they remember did. That?
Yes, I remember it.
Maybe some of these kickers should kick barefoot. Maybe it would help.
Maybe they ought to try, but I nobody does it anymore. But now, if you are not hitting 83 to 85% of your field goals, you're not getting it done. So you can tell me how they did on a day at practice one day or not at practice, but it you don't know until you put the guy out there in the game and it's 13-10 in the fourth quarter and you got to have the 45-yarder. Mm-hmm. That's when you know. Do you have your guy or you not have your guy? And there is no, the crazy thing about it is there's no foolproof way to go out and find a kicker until that guy gets in your uniform in the crowd, and the crowd's going wild, and it's for real, and he gets it done.
But my question to that is, why have so many teams found their kicker?
But there's always a revolving group of teams that don't have their kicker.
We were talking about Cairo Santos yesterday. Mm-hmm. He didn't make it longer than a season in Tennessee, and he's going on his fourth in Chicago.
They gave up on him after a few games. He had a bad game against the Bills, and they cut him. That was the ultimate musical chairs.
He hit 44% of his field goals in his handful of games in Tennessee. He's averaging over 90% in his four seasons at Chicago. What's the difference there?
I think what it boils down to is I think because you see these kickers, they come here, and for whatever reason it's not working, then they go someplace else and it gets better. To me, what I'm starting to see is everyone's playing tight, in a sense, all these kickers, because they understand if I miss a field goal, that may be it. Hell, Vrabel just said it. Listen, he's the next guy who's going to take a crack
he
at it.
He gets a crack at it.
We gonna,
if
we
he
gonna
messes
bring
up,
in somebody
we'll find
else.
Another guy.
Yeah, they're not being patient. And the reason they're not being patient, they can't afford to be patient. They averaged 17 points a game last year. 17, that's the bottom half of the league.
It's disgusting.
It's not good. And they had trouble scoring in the second half last year. So when you are a team, and that's why I brought it up with Hutt. Like, if you are a team that has a trouble scoring points, that kicker becomes a premium. If they are averaging 22, 23, 24 points a game, they got a little leeway with the kicker. Mm-hmm. He can miss maybe two or three during the season. You just hope they're not in critical situations. But you believe enough in your offense that, okay, if he misses this field goal, our defense is good enough to get it back, and we are good enough as the offense to go down and score. Well, the Titans can't say that. They can say one part of it, our defense is good enough to stop an opponent, but they can't say our offense then is good enough to score points when we don't have a legitimate kicker. Vrabel is telling you that. So every kicker that comes in here, they don't have patience with them. They don't. If you miss one or two, your ass gone. Mm-hmm. We're looking for another kicker. You're never going to be able to get a permanent kicker if you keep on playing musical chairs. And I get it why they're doing it. I understand it. My thing is, kicker, you have one job and one job only. While everybody's out there, grinding and grunting it out, trying to score points, putting you in a position, you're sitting over there on the sideline, you're practicing your kicking swing, your kicking motion. Only thing you got to do is get up there and kick the football. Is it hard? Yes, it's hard for me because I don't kick.
That's not your job.
But for you, it's not hard. It's hard for you to play receiver, but it's not hard for me to play receiver.
But they're held to a higher standard now because they're almost their own worst enemy because they are expected to basically make every kick, and nobody makes every kick. You said basically why do all these other teams have the kicker? Well, I'm looking at the list of the kickers. Other than Justin Tucker, who is in his own category.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the list. I don't see a lot of kickers you can just reel off that have been with the same team for five, six, seven straight years. You'd be surprised how many. Like, think about it. I mean, go down the list. Well, one of the guys who had a great year last year, Eddie Pinheiro. If you told me he was like a second baseman for the 1975 Philadelphia Phillies, yeah, oh yeah, old Eddie Pinheiro. I don't know Eddie Pinheiro. He went 33 for 35. Completely unknown guy. He had a great year last year, but I'll bet you if he misses three in the first two games, they'll be like, well, what's wrong with Eddie? You know, it's like, so he's been around for a couple years. Last year it all came together for him, but he was just as unknown as Caleb Shudak until last year.
But I would like to know how many teams in the league have gone through just the sheer number of kickers that the Titans have.
Not as many as the Titans. I grant you that. But like Greg Zuerlein, been around the league a long time, but he's kicked for a lot of teams, a lot of different teams. Ryan Succop has kicked for a lot of different teams, still going. Nick Folk kicked for a lot of different teams. Robbie Gold. Been around for a long time, but my point is these guys bounce around.
And that's the nature of the position.
That is the nature of the position, right?
But just the sheer number of kickers that the Titans have gone through since Mike Vrabel has been named the head coach. I mean, you start Ryan Succop, Cody Parkey, Greg Joseph, Cairo Santos, Sam Sloman, Steven Gostkowski, Michael Badgley, Randy Bullock, Josh Lambeau, Caleb Shudak, Sam Thicken, Trey Wolfe. That's 12 kickers.
It's embarrassing.
That's unacceptable.
Where is Thicken?
I think he's hurt.
Yeah, because that was big. Where is Bullock? Is he on a roster right now? I don't see him on a roster right now. So isn't that strange that they haven't even brought him up?
Well, in situations like that, and we discussed this the other day, that guys like Randy Bullock, these veteran guys, you don't want to have to bring them in. You would rather bring them in after the first game rather than bring them in before that, because now if anything goes wrong, now you're stuck with them. They're on the roster no matter what. But if you bring them in after that first game is done, now they're not guaranteed a roster.
Yeah, it's a week to week. You earn your paycheck each week.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, let's continue the conversation coming up next, because I think we've gotten to the volume of kickers that this team has gone through, and the amount of kickers that have hopped onto the carousel is unacceptable. So whose fault is that really? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.